Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week, we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us as we travel this week to Eastern Europe. Eastern Europe is made up of all the countries that were once part of the Soviet Union. There are approximately 21, depending on which resource you go to. The Slavs were an ancient tribe which settled in this area thousands of years ago. No one really knows where they came from. The largest river in all of Europe is here, the Danube River. The Baltic Sea is here as well. And this region is home to the legend of vampires. A real person known as Vlad the Impaler, who was a very cruel ruler, is said to have been the origin of this legend. For further information about Eastern Europe for children, I suggest KIDZ search.com. Our first story is a Slavic folktale about a vampire, a prince, and true love. Here is The Girl in the Chest. There was once a horrible vampire who took the form of a handsome young man and went to the house of an old woman who had two daughters and pretended he wanted to marry the oldest. "I live far from here," the vampire said. "I own my own farm and am well-to-do, and in marrying me your daughter would get a desirable husband indeed. I am so well off that I don't have to ask for any dowry." Now the old woman was so poor that she couldn't have given a penny of dowry. That was the only reason why her daughters hadn't long ago been married to youths of their own village. So when the stranger said he would require no dowry, the old woman whispered to her oldest daughter, "He seems to be all right. Perhaps you had better take him." The poor girl accepted her mother's advice and that afternoon started off with the vampire, who said he would lead her home and marry her. They walked a great distance, and as evening came on, they reached a wild, ghostly spot, which frightened the girl half to death. "This way, my dear," the vampire said, pushing her into an opening in the earth. "We take this underground passage and soon we'll be home." The passage led to a sort of cave, which really was the vampire's home. "What an awful place!" the poor girl cried in terror. "Let me out!" "Let you out indeed," the vampire sneered, taking his own horrible shape and laughing cruelly. "Here you are and here you stay, and if you don't do everything I tell you, I'll soon finish you."
"No," she cried. "I won't, I won't."
And with that, he killed her with no more feeling than if she were a fly. Then in a short time he went back to the old woman and said, "Dear mother, my poor wife is ill, and she begs that you send her your second daughter to nurse her. She asks for her daughter night and day, and I fear she will die unless she sees her." When the poor old woman heard this, she begged the second daughter to go at once with the young man and nurse her sick sister. So the youngest sister, when she found out the truth about the horrid vampire, didn't sit down and weep helplessly as her sister had done. Instead, she tried to find some way of escape. There were doors in the cave, which the vampire told her were doors to closets she must not enter. When the vampire was out, she opened these doors and found that they all led into long underground passages. "This is my one chance to get back to Earth," the girl thought, and she fled down one of the passages. You may be sure the vampire, when he came back and found her gone, fell into a great rage. He went running wildly up and down the various passages and lost so much time searching the wrong passages that the girl was able to make good her escape and reach the upper world in safety. She came out in a wood with no sign of human habitation anywhere in sight. "What shall I do now?" she thought. "If I stay here alone and unprotected, some wild beast or evil creature may get me." So she knelt down and prayed God to give her a chest that she could lock from the inside with one of her own golden hairs so securely that no one could force it open. God heard her prayer, and presently behind some bushes she found just such a chest. When it grew dark and she was ready to go to bed, she crept into the chest, locked it with a hair, and slept peacefully, knowing that nothing could harm her. So she lived in the woods some time, eating berries and fruits and sleeping safely in the chest. Now it so happened that the king's son one morning went hunting in this very wood and caught a glimpse of the girl as she was gathering berries. He thought he had never seen such a beautiful creature, and instantly he fell in love with her. But when he reached the clump of bushes where he had seen her, she was gone. He had called his huntsmen together and told them to search everywhere. They hunted for hours, and all they could find was a chest. They tried to open the chest to see what was in it, but couldn't. "Waste no time over it," the prince said at last. "Carry it home to the palace, as it is, and have it placed in my chamber." The huntsmen did this, and a few hours later, when the girl peeped out of her chest, she found herself alone in the prince's chamber. His supper was standing on a table in readiness for his coming. The girl ate the supper and was safely back in her chest before he arrived. When he did come, the prince was amazed to see empty plates and called the servants to know who had eaten his supper. The servants were as much surprised as the prince and declared that no one had entered the chamber. The same thing happened the next day, and the following day the prince had one of his servants hide behind the curtains and watch to find out, if possible, how the food disappeared. The story the servant had to tell of what he saw was so thrilling that the prince could scarcely wait for the next day when he himself hid behind the curtains and watched. The serving people put the food on the table and retired, and presently the lid of the chest opened and the prince saw the beautiful maiden of the wood step out. When she sat down at the table, the prince slipped up behind her and caught her in his arms. "You lovely creature," he said. "I'm not going to let you escape me again." At first, the girl was greatly frightened, but the prince reassured her, telling her that he loved her dearly and only wanted to make her his wife. He led her at once to the king, his father, and the girl was so modest and lovely that the king soon agreed to the marriage. Everybody in court was delighted. Everybody, that is, but the chamberlain, who had had hopes of marrying his own daughter to the prince. His daughter was an ugly, ill-tempered girl, and the prince had never even looked at her. The chamberlain was sure, however, that with a little more time he could arrange the match to his liking, so the appearance of this beautiful girl, who came from heaven knows where, threw him into a fearful rage, and he decided to do away with her at any cost. Now he had in his employ a great burly soldier. He called this fellow to him, and he told him that he must kidnap the girl at once and kill her. So when the palace was quiet that night, the soldier stole to the bedchamber where the girl was lying asleep, threw a great robe over her head to stifle her cries, and carried her off. She fainted away from fright, and the soldier, thinking her dead, tossed her into a field of nettles in the outskirts of the town. Now, as you can imagine, in the morning there was a great uproar in the palace when it was discovered that the prince's beautiful bride-to-be had disappeared. The prince was utterly grief-stricken and refused to eat. The king and all the ladies of the court tried their best to comfort him, but he turned away from them, declaring he would die if his bride were not restored to him. The rascally chamberlain put his handkerchief to his eyes and pretended to weep, he was so affected by the sight of the prince's grief. "My dear boy," he said, "I would that I could find this maiden for you. It breaks my heart to see you so sad and unhappy. But I'm sorry to tell you that I hear she was a Via, a fairy, and not a human maiden at all. You know how mysteriously she came, and now she's gone just as mysteriously. So put the thought of her out of your mind, and I'm sure you'll soon find a human maiden who is worthy of your love. Come here, my daughter, and tell the prince how sorry you are that he is in grief." But the sight of the chamberlain's ugly daughter only made the prince long the more for the beautiful girl who was gone. She, meantime, had found refuge in the hut of an old woman who had heard her groan in the early dawn when she lay among the nettles and had taken compassion on her. "You may stay with me until you're well," the old woman said. The girl was young and healthy, and in a day or two she had recovered the ill treatment she had suffered at the hands of the soldier. "Won't you let me live with you a while, Granny?" she said to the old woman. "I'll cook and scrub and work, and you won't have to regret the little I eat."
"Can you cook? Because if you can, perhaps you know a dish that would tempt the appetite of our poor young prince,"
the old woman said. You know, the poor boy has had a terrible disappointment in love, and he refuses to eat. The heralds were out this morning proclaiming that the king would richly reward anyone who could prepare a dish that would tempt the prince's appetite.
Granny, the girl said, I know a wonderful way to prepare beans. Let me cook a dish of beans, and do you carry them to the palace.
So the girl cooked the beans and placed them prettily in a dish, and on one side of the dish she put a tiny little ringlet of her own golden hair. If he sees the hair, she thought to herself, he'll know the beans are from me. And that's exactly what happened. To please his father, the prince had consented to look at every dish as it came. He had already looked at hundreds of them before the old woman arrived and turned away from them all. Then the old woman came. As she passed before the prince, she lifted the cover of the dish, held it towards him, and curtsied. The prince was just about to turn away when he saw the tiny ringlet of hair. Oh, he said, wait a minute. Those beans look good. To the king's delight, he took the dish out of the old woman's hand, examined it carefully, and when no one was looking, slipped the ringlet into his pocket. The king gave the old woman some golden ducats and begged her to prepare another dish for the prince on the morrow. So the next day, the girl again sent a tiny ringlet of her hair on the side of the plate, and again the prince, after scorning all the other food offered him, took the old woman's dish and ate it clean. On the third day, the prince engaged the old woman in conversation. Where do you live, Granny?
In a little tumble-down house beside the nettles, she told him.
Do you live alone?
Just now, the old woman said, I have a dear girl living with me. I found her one morning lying in the nettles, where some ruffians had left her for dead. She's a good girl, and she scrubs and bakes and cooks for me and lets me rest my poor old bones.
Now the prince knew what he wanted to know. Granny, he said, tomorrow's Sunday. Now I want you to stay home in the afternoon because I'm coming to see you. In great excitement, the old woman hurried home and told the girl that the prince was coming to see them on Sunday afternoon. When the prince arrived, he immediately went to the girl and said, Why were you hiding from me? He lifted her up and kissed her tenderly.
Because I knew if you really loved me, you would find me, she said.
Now that I have found you, the prince declared, I shall never let you leave me again. Then the girl told the prince about the wicked chamberlain and the soldier, and it was all she and the old woman could do to keep the prince from drawing his sword and rushing out instantly to kill both of them. The old woman begged the prince to take the girl secretly to the king and have the king hear her story and then let him pass judgment on the chamberlain according to the laws of the land. At last the prince agreed to do this. So they covered the girl's head with a veil and took her to the king. When the king heard her story, he called the court together at once and told them the outrage that had been committed against his son's promised bride. He commanded that the murderous soldier be executed the next day, and he decreed that the chamberlain and his wicked daughter be stripped of their lands and riches and sent into exile. As for the girl, she married the prince, and they lived together in great happiness. But what about that evil vampire from whom she escaped? For all we know, he is still wandering the countryside, hoping to find her. Let's hope he never does. Our last story is another Slavic folktale. Here is The Dragon and the Prince. There was an emperor who had three sons. One day the eldest son went out hunting, and when he got outside the town, up sprang a hare out of a bush, and he after it, and hither and thither, till the hare fled into a watermill, and the prince after it. But it was not a hare, but a dragon, and it waited for the prince and devoured him. When several days had elapsed and the prince did not return home, people began to wonder why it was that he was not to be found. Then the middle son went hunting, and as he issued from the town, a hare sprang out of the bush, and the prince after it, and hither and thither, till the hare fled into the watermill, and the prince after it. But it was not a hare, but a dragon, which waited for and devoured him. When some days had elapsed and the princes did not return, either of them, the whole court was in sorrow. Then the third son went hunting to see whether he could not find his brothers. When he issued from the town, again up sprang a hare out of a bush, and the prince after it, and hither and thither, till the hare fled into the watermill. But the prince did not choose to follow it, but went to find another game, saying to himself, "When I return, I shall find you." After this, he went for a long time up and down the hill, but found nothing, and then returned to the watermill. But when he got there, there was only an old woman in the mill. The prince greeted her with the words, "God help you, old woman." The old woman replied, "God help you, my son." Then the prince asked her, "Where, old woman, is my hare?" She replied, "My son, that was not a hare, but a dragon. It kills and throttles many people." Hearing this, the prince was somewhat disturbed and said to the old woman, "What shall we do now? Doubtless my two brothers also have perished here." The old woman answered, "They have indeed, but there's no help for it. Go home, my son, lest you follow them." Then he said to her, "Dear old woman, do you know what? I know that you will be glad to liberate yourself from that pest." The old woman interrupted him, "How should I not? It captured me too in this way, but now I have no means of escape." Then he proceeded, "Listen well to what I am going to say to you. Ask it whither it goes and where its strength is. Then kiss all that place where it tells you its strength is, as if from love, till you ascertain it, and afterwards tell me when I come." Then the prince went off to the palace, and the old woman remained in the watermill. When the dragon came in, the old woman began to question it. "Where in God's name have you been? Whither do you go so far? You will never tell me whither you go." The dragon replied, "Well, my dear old woman, I do go far." Then the old woman began to coax it. "And why do you go so far? Tell me where your strength is. If I knew where your strength is, I don't know what I should do for love. I would kiss all that place." Thereupon the dragon smiled and said to her, "Yonder is my strength in that fireplace." Then the old woman began to fondle and kiss the fireplace, and the dragon, on seeing it, burst into a laugh and said to her, "Silly old woman, my strength isn't there. My strength is in the tree fungus in front of the house." Then the old woman began to fondle and kiss the tree, and the dragon again laughed and said to her, "Away, old woman, my strength isn't there." Then the old woman inquired, "Where is it, then?" The dragon began to give an account in detail. "My strength is a long way off, and you cannot go thither. Far in another empire, under the emperor's city, is a lake. In that lake is a dragon, and in that dragon is a boar, and in the boar a pigeon, and in that is my strength." The next morning, when the dragon went away from the mill, the prince came to the old woman, and the old woman told him all that she had heard from the dragon. Then he left his home and disguised himself. He put shepherd's boots on his feet, took a shepherd's staff in his hand, and went into the world. As he went on thus from village to village and from town to town, at last he came into another empire and into the imperial city and a lake under which the dragon was. On going into the town, he began to inquire who wanted a shepherd. The citizens told him that the emperor did. Then he went straight to the emperor. After he announced himself, the emperor admitted him into his presence and asked him, "Do you wish to keep sheep?" He replied, "I do, your highness." Then the emperor engaged him and began to inform and instruct him. "There is here a lake, and alongside of the lake a very beautiful pasture, and when you call the sheep out, they go thither at once and spread themselves around the lake. But whatever shepherd goes off there, that shepherd returns back no more. Therefore, my son, I tell you, don't let the sheep have their own way and go where they will, but keep them where you will." The prince thanked the emperor, got himself ready, and called out the sheep, taking with him, moreover, two hounds that should catch a boar on the open country, and a falcon that could capture any bird, and carrying also a pair of bagpipes. When he called out the sheep, he let them go at once to the lake, and when the sheep arrived at the lake, they immediately spread round it, and the prince placed the falcon on a stump, and the hounds and the bagpipes under the stump, then tucked up his hose and sleeves, waded into the lake, and began to shout, "Dragon, dragon, come out to single combat with me." The dragon called out in reply, "I will do so now, prince, now." When the dragon came out, it seized him by the waist, and they wrestled a summer day till afternoon. But when the heat of afternoon came on, the dragon said, "Let me go, prince, that I may moisten my parched head in the lake and toss you to the sky." But the prince replied, "Come, dragon, don't talk nonsense. If I had the emperor's daughter to kiss me on the forehead, I would toss you still higher." Thereupon, the dragon suddenly let go of him and went off into the lake. On the approach of evening, he washed and got himself up nicely, placed the falcon on his arm, the hounds behind him, and the bagpipes under his arm, then drove the sheep and went into the town playing on the bagpipes. When he arrived at the town, the whole town assembled as to see a wondrous sight, because he had come, whereas previously no shepherd had been able to come from the lake. The next day the prince got ready again and went with his sheep straight to the lake. But the emperor sent two grooms after him to go stealthily and see what he did, and they placed themselves on a high hill whence they could have a good view. When the shepherd arrived, he put the hounds and bagpipes under the stump and the falcon upon it, then tucked up his hose and sleeves, waded into the lake and shouted, "Dragon, dragon, come out to single combat with me." The dragon replied, "I will do so, prince, now, now." And it seized him by the waist and wrestled with him a summer's day till afternoon. But when the afternoon heat came on, the dragon said, "Let me go, prince, that I may moisten my parched head in the lake and may toss you in the sky." The prince replied, "Come, dragon, don't talk nonsense. If I had the emperor's daughter to kiss me on the forehead, I would toss you still higher." Thereupon the dragon suddenly left hold of him and went off into the lake. When night approached, the prince drove the sheep as before and went home playing the bagpipes. When he arrived at the town, the whole town was astir and began to wonder, because the shepherd came home every evening, which no one had been able to do before. Those two grooms had already arrived at the palace before the prince and related to the emperor in order everything that they had heard and seen. Now when the emperor saw that the shepherd returned home, he immediately summoned his daughter into his presence and told her all, what it was and how it was. "But," said he, "tomorrow you must go with the shepherd to the lake and kiss him on the forehead." When she heard this, she burst into tears and began to entreat her father, "You have no one but me, and I am your only daughter, and you don't care about me if I perish?" Then the emperor began to persuade and encourage her. "Don't fear, my daughter. You see, we have had so many changes of shepherds, and of all that went out to the lake, not one has returned. But he has been contending with the dragon for 2 whole days, and it has done him no hurt. I assure you in God's name that he is able to overcome the dragon. Only go tomorrow with him to see whether he will free us from this mischief which has destroyed so many people." When on the morrow the day dawned and the sun came forth, up rose the shepherd, up rose the maiden too, to begin to prepare for going to the lake. The shepherd was cheerful, more cheerful than ever, but the emperor's daughter was sad and shed tears. The shepherd comforted her. "Lady sister, I pray you, do not weep, but do what I tell you. When it is time, run up and kiss me, and fear not." As he went and drove the sheep, the shepherd was thoroughly cheery and played a merry tune on his bagpipes. But the damsel did nothing but weep as she went beside him, and he several times left off playing and turned towards her. "Weep not, golden one, fear not." When they arrived at the lake, the sheep immediately spread round it, and the prince placed the falcon on the stump and the hounds and the bagpipes under it, then tucked up his hose and sleeves, waded into the water and shouted, "Dragon, dragon, come out to single combat with me. Let us measure ourselves once more." The dragon replied, "I will, prince, now, now." When it came out, they seized each other by the middle and wrestled a summer's day till afternoon. But when the afternoon heat came on, the dragon said, "Let me go, prince, that I may moisten my parched head in the lake and toss you to the skies." The Prince replied, "Come, dragon, don't talk nonsense. If I had the emperor's daughter to kiss me on the forehead, I would toss you much higher." When he said this, the emperor's daughter ran up and kissed him on the face, on the eye, and on the forehead. Then he swung the dragon and tossed it high into the air, and when it fell to the ground, it burst into pieces. As it burst into pieces, out of it sprang a wild boar and started to run away. But the prince shouted to his shepherd's dogs, "Hold it! Don't let it go!" And the dogs sprang up and after it, caught it, and soon tore it to pieces. Then out of the boar flew a pigeon, and the prince loosed the falcon, and the falcon caught the pigeon and brought it into the prince's hands. The prince said to it, "Tell me now, where are my brothers?" The pigeon replied, "I will, only do me no harm. Immediately behind your father's town is a watermill, and in the watermill are three wands that have sprouted up. Cut these three wands up from below and strike with them upon their root. An iron door will immediately open into a large vault. In that vault are many people, old and young, rich and poor, small and great, wives and maidens, so that you could settle a populous empire. There, too, are your brothers." When the pigeon had told him all this, the prince immediately wrung its neck. The emperor had gone out in person and posted himself on the hill from which the grooms had viewed the shepherd, and he, too, was a spectator of all that had taken place. After the shepherd thus had obtained the dragon's head, twilight began to approach. He washed himself nicely, took the falcon on his shoulder, the hounds behind him, and the bagpipes under his arm, played as he went, drove the sheep, and proceeded to the emperor's palace with the damsel at his side, still in terror. When they came to the town, all the town assembled as to see a wonder. The emperor, who had seen all his heroism from the hill, called him into his presence and gave him his daughter, went immediately to church, had them married, and held a wedding festival for a week. After this, the prince told him who and whence he was, and the emperor and the whole town rejoiced still more. Then, as the prince was urgent to go to his own home, the emperor gave him a large escort and equipped him for the journey. When they were in the neighborhood of the watermill, the prince halted his attendants, went inside, cut up the three wands, and struck the root with them, and the iron door opened at once. In the vault was a vast multitude of people. The prince ordered them to come out one by one and go whither each would, and stood himself at the door. They came out thus, one after another, and lo, there were his brothers also, whom he embraced and kissed. When the whole multitude had come out, they thanked him for releasing and delivering them, and went each to his own home. But he went to his father's house with his brothers and bride, and there lived and reigned to the end of his days. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. This will be an unusual set of stories, but appropriate for Brookings right now. It's all about fire. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading. This has been a production of KCIW LP 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon.